Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
I can't think of a more important topic than how we translate inventiveness into innovation and growth. I mean, I think the self-evident truth that this country's economic prosperity is tied to the quality of its ideas. It's always been true that ideas create wealth. James Watt tinkering with a separate condensation chamber, you wouldn't have the Industrial Revolution in the UK as the way we had it. So I'm never, ever, ever in rooms surrounded by industrialists complaining about universities. I say, well, without the universities, you won't have growth in your companies, and it's as straightforward as that. How we do that is a separate set of issues. I've spent my career in media and tech companies, about the BBC and elsewhere. And indeed, I've done that round of that we've just been talking about, just going round and round to get funds into my companies, and it's bloody tough. But I've also spent a long time with universities. I've been a chairman of a university and an external examiner and a young lecturer. So I've always had the sense that bringing them both together is where the real power lies in terms of growing the economy. And so when the Council for Industry and Higher Education role came up about 4 years ago, I took it. And since then, I've been working with people like Julia to turn the old CIHE into something bigger and scalable. And that's opportunities emerged with the emergence of the National Centre for Universities and Business, which I'll go into in a bit of detail. And I'll come back to the core theme of the session, which is about connectivity, because one of the things we haven't discussed so far today is how the internet changes everything. And the transformational power of platforms online seems to be one of the great assets that we haven't yet exploited in the relationship between businesses and universities. So the roots of the National Centre was in Tim Wilson's review of business university collaboration. Tim had been a trustee of the CIHE, and he phoned me up one day and said, "Look, would you be prepared to take on a bigger role for this?" In this area, and he asked us to take on this idea of being a subscription-based charity focused on information. I obviously said yes. I mean, you know, I don't often say no to Tim. And we worked with Biz, and it came out in a kind of bigger idea, which was that the National Centre would focus on the strategic partnership between university and business, and obviously the key to that is driving economic growth. That was born out of a lot of work that we had done in the CIHE. We'd been working on task forces. So far, we've done three. One was on the creative and digital industries, which I'll come back to in a second. The second was on engineering and manufacturing. The third was on research and development, how we get more value out of research and development. We produced a series of reports on the UK R&D landscape. How do you get evaluate the impact of R&D? How do you enhance collaboration? And finally, how do we get it out into small companies? And these reports became very good sources of dialogue with Biz and indeed with Treasury. And some of the rather startling findings on the first report was that only 3.5% of R&D is done by small independent companies. So whilst we constantly think about small companies, and indeed we should and must, we can't lose sight of the fact that the vast bulk of R&D, the vast bulk of turning inventiveness into innovation, is done in big companies. And I think one of the other things we've got to really think through collectively, and you guys are specialists at it, is how how supply and value chains work into big companies. Julia's right about the growth in small companies, but the supply and value chains in B2B terms into big companies seems to me a vitally important element of all of this. The second thing in the R&D landscape report that again jumped out at me is that we're the most open innovation system in the world. There's more money invested in the UK's innovation system by foreign companies than any other territory, but it also makes us the most vulnerable. We don't have the right conditions of inventiveness and innovation and skills and talent in the UK, then that vulnerability means that the money can just shift. And we know that when Pfizer shut down, they moved a vast amount of money out of the UK R&D system. So, again, whilst we nurture and care for our smaller companies, we've got to make sure that we keep the conditions right for the big companies in the UK. One of our business models in the CIHE was to turn it from ideas into action, and three projects in particular were about small company development. One was the Brighton Fuse project. So we raised £1 million to develop with a company called Wired Sussex, who represent 2,500 small creative digital companies in Brighton, a way of understanding how that Brighton creative and digital cluster works with both universities. That's coming to a conclusion now. And it's very important to try and understand cluster development, how much is about the place, how much is about the culture. The idea that we can sort of just pick up a cluster idea, and again, I bow to your wisdom in all this, you can't just pick up the concept of a cluster and drop it in a city, drop it in a town. It's got to have particular cultural characteristics of the town. We're beginning to understand how much the Brighton phenomenon is about Brighton and being London by the sea. And how much of it's about the universities and how much is about the companies themselves. So there's a lot of learning still to be done, and Julia's quite right. We have to understand better how these small companies evolve and develop. The second project, I think Cathy Garner's here, who might have talked about it this morning, is the London Creative Digital Fusion Project. And again, it's a similar idea, but it's much more tech transfer and knowledge exchange focused. And these come out of our Creative and Digital Task Force, which was branded The Fuse. And the idea there was that actually bringing creative and digital together is a fused industry. And I spent my whole career constantly shuttling back forward between creativity and technology. And those of us who are in this industry can't stand the idea that there's something called the culture industries and something called the technology industries. That's not our world. Our world is where creativity and technology are part and parcel of the same thing. And it's good to see actually government beginning to evolve that in terms of understanding how these different sectors work. So that was our kind of business model and how we worked. And when we turned that into saying, well, what would a national centre look like, we asked a group of senior colleagues, including Julia, to come together to help us think about it. And that group was chaired by Richard Lambert, who had done the Lambert Review all those years ago, Business University Collaboration, and Anton Muscatelli, who's the Vice-Chancellor of Glasgow. But it also included Sam Laidlaw, who did the CBI Task Force report 5 years ago. So we had everyone in the room who'd ever done a report on business university collaboration to say, right, what is it we're trying to do? And the vision that evolved was this idea of increasing the prosperity and well-being of the UK. I think just growth on its own is not really what we're looking for. And sustainable growth is an okay idea, but it's this idea of that prosperity is about a society at ease with itself. It's not just about growing for its own sake. It's about all the other responsibilities that come with being a prosperous society. And the heart of the doing this was through world-leading university and business collaboration. And we're pretty good at this. I mean, by anyone's standards, the UK is good at business university collaboration, but we can always get better, and we want to be number one. And how do we do that? Well, what are the means of effective collaboration? We're focusing in on talent, innovation, and expertise. We use the word talent rather than skills. I think, as you saw from Julia's presentation, there's a concept that the idea that you can reduce a university education to a set of skills is very misleading, too instrumentalist, and talent's a broader concept. And universities, all the way back for 500-600 years, have been producing talented people with a rounded sense of self. And in my slightly grounded moments, I talk about this as a form that humanist education is as relevant today as it was 600 years ago. And what universities do is a kind of humanist education for businesses. Innovation and inventiveness is crucial. And then finally, expertise. Again, I think the focus on skills doesn't often enough take into account that you need the highest quality expertise in your companies to drive them forward. The core partners in the organization, it's genuinely UK-wide. Which is terrific in a way that the whole of the UK's funding councils have come in to support it, the TSB have come in to support it. Currently, we've got 36 major companies at chair, CEO, or group level, and about 33 universities. And the difference between the old CIHE and this is we're taking the cap off. The old CIHE was capped in terms of university membership. We're now taking that cap off, and it was capped in terms of business membership, and that cap's come off. So generally UK-wide, generally looking to operate with businesses all over the UK. I've got my rather charming little jug of water. So three areas of focus. How do you broker and facilitate world-class collaboration? And I'll come back to that second. How do we work together to build a high-level talent base? And then finally, how do we translate inventiveness into innovation? I don't want to be too linear about this. Those of you who are innovation specialists might think that's too crude. What we're just trying to capture is the idea that universities are inherently inventive. I mean, that's just what they're supposed to be here on God's earth for. And businesses have got to be innovative and drive profit because that's what they're for. So it does sound a bit linear, but basically what we're trying to do is join the inventiveness and innovation chain up. There's two big buckets of stuff. One is is these two, inventiveness into innovation, prosperity, and then talent, expertise, and attributes. There's four ways we're going to try and guess at this. Obviously, we need the highest quality analytical work. We're working currently with all the funding councils on what we're trying to measure, what's the state of the relationship. And simple things like, for example, we don't really know how many students have got any kind of quality work experience. There's no audit across the system. So we're trying to understand what it is that we should be measuring and figuring out how to measure it. Not that we'll do it ourselves. I mean, you know, we'll be working with others on all this. Second thing is best practice, case studies. Now, that's a specific thing we're trying to do here, which is to be very video rich. You know, it's very web 2.0. A lot of text on a page is not what a website's for, you know, so we're looking for a lot of video work. And if you guys have got any, you want to send them to me. There's the website at the end. The brokerage is the biggest and toughest and most difficult bit. And I think, though, that the stars are beginning to align on this. So there's two ways that we're thinking about brokering services. One is through what we're calling quality work experience. Now, we know that all of you do work experience with your students, but we know it's patchy. We know that Julia's university is one of the best in the country at it. We're trying to get all the learning from everyone that says to everyone, can we kite mark what quality work experience is so that it's relevant to your either your degree or your student experience? And we're trying to do it on an online platform, and we've identified one or two pilots that we can do next year to try and make sense of this. I think it's really important that we don't go out all guns blazing and fall over on this. You know, it's important we all learn from each other, take our risks slowly. We're looking to work with two different sectors on how to get this quality, kite-marked quality work experience platform going. And the second one is the one that we've all been talking about today so far, is IP and consultancy. How do we get small companies onto a platform where they can, without too much risk and without too much effort, engage with universities up and down the land? And it's not just a question of saying you live in Aberdeen, therefore you're just going to engage with Aberdeen University. You might live in Aberdeen and be a biotech and want to engage with Plymouth University. So we have to figure out how that platform works without losing, I think as Julia quite often reminds me, without losing the regional dimension to it. Again, we've got some piloting plans on the go for that, and we'll be rolling those out next year. One of the assets, I think, in all of this that we don't use enough, I think, are trade associations. So again, we'll be trying to figure out how to work with trade associations to make this happen. One of the things I think that's crucial here is the reason why the Brighton Fuse project worked for us was that I could make one phone call to the trade association head in Brighton and talk to 3,000 companies. And we all know that talking to 3,000 companies if you're a university is incredibly tough, whereas if you talk to one person, you could pull it off. So we're trying to join up all of these different ideas and thoughts. I've spent my career in television. You never walk in front of a speaker. those brokerage platforms are what we're trying to develop now. And then finally, we're trying to turn it all into action projects like the Brighton Fuse and the London Fuse. I keep coming back to this brokerage thing because I do think in my career, I was chairman of a dating company, okay? So shoot me. But I did learn a lot about how these algorithms of online dating work and the difference between the old Craigslist version of it, which was frankly just about sex, to something like eHarmony, which is about psychological profiling and matching services. I think you can take a lot of the wheel spin out of the relationship between small companies and universities if we can figure out, is there something in the dating industry, okay, that we can port across into creating partnerships and collaborations. And indeed, I've now got the chief psychologist from eHarmony.com engaged on this and the chief technology officer. So expect the eHarmony partnership between businesses and universities to start emerging anytime soon. So those are the things that we're working on. As I said to you, I think that the brokerage thing is the toughest and the most exciting and the one that we can pull off first in this country, because I've never seen it done properly anywhere else in the world. And I was going to take you through the website, but I think I'm running out of time. Yeah, that's it. That's the new website. We've got blogs and case studies up already. Anybody who wants to submit anything to us, please feel free. Anybody who wants to give us advice, please feel free. We need it. We're looking for it. We're a centre in a different way. We're not a centre that's going to pump stuff out. We're a centre that's going to bring stuff in. We are your centre for universities of business, not our centre for universities of business. So please help us. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.